Hello everyone and welcome to our next episode. Today our guest is Madame Natalia Gavrilitsa. It's great pleasure and honor to welcome her to our podcast episode. Natalia Gavrilitsa served as the 15th Prime Minister of Moldova between August 21 and February 23. She led the government through multiple overlapping crises caused by the war in neighboring Ukraine, while also advancing ambitious anti-corruption, economic and governance reforms. During her time in the office, Moldova received the largest influx of Ukrainian refugees of any European country, managed to diversify its energy market away from Russian gas, and became a candidate country to the European Union. Madame Gavrilitsa, welcome. And once again, it's really great pleasure and honor to have you in our podcast episode.
Yeah, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for the invitation. It's great to be here.
And for using this privilege, I would like to ask the first question. As you know, the Moldova is considered relatively resource-poor country due to its lack of important coal, oil, and gas reserves. More specifically, around 20% of its energy demand is covered by the domestic production, and the rest is imported mainly from different countries or mainly from Russia. So therefore, we are wondering, what measures were you, as the former Prime Minister of the Moldova and your government, implemented to reduce the energy dependency on Russia? And how was Russia responded to your measures? What were the main challenges during your period?
Indeed, Moldova is resource poor and was heavily dependent on energy imports from Russia. Even those 20% local production that you referred to, this is produced as a side effect of producing heating, also based on the Russian gas. So before October 2021, we had 100% dependency on provision of gas from Gazprom, from the Russian Federation. And then we also had 100% dependency on provision of electricity from the separatist region, which the central authorities of Moldova don't control. It's called the Transnistrian region. And the production of electricity in this region is also based on provision of Russian gas. So in October 2021 was the first time we were faced with an energy blackmail from Gazprom. We were in the process of renegotiating a contract, and we saw provisions cut by 30%. And then after the war in Ukraine began, in the last heating season, we saw up to 60% of the required gas stopped, despite having a contract signed. So what Moldova did is, within 1 year, we managed to diversify from 100% dependency of gas provision to 100% provision from alternative sources. So we very quickly had to build the capacity of a state-owned enterprise to become a trader on international markets. And we started buying on the international markets despite the very high prices. So this actually had quite severe consequences on the standards of living in Moldova, on inflation. So, for example, the tariff for gas increased 7 times. We also had to quickly introduce a targeted social protection program that saw us provide energy subsidy based on an energy vulnerability score to more than half of the Moldovan households. So a lot of the problems that we are facing are the same problems that many European countries are facing, you know, a slowdown in growth and high inflation, except we are seeing this on a much bigger magnitude because we are the immediate neighbor of Ukraine and have quite severe consequences of the war in Ukraine. And so, for example, in 2022, we had a GDP decrease by 6%, and then inflation reached at the highest point 35%, which is quite a high number. And this was largely driven by an increase in food prices, the increase in energy, and it took a lot of effort for the government to both access these alternative resources and at the same time to make sure that we compensate at least partly for the impact on the most poor. I'm very proud that the government that I led, even in these circumstances of very high international prices, managed to obtain this important element of sovereignty and achieve in just 1 year independence on energy provision. Before I go to electricity, let me say that Moldova was the first country to use the new Greece-Bulgaria interconnector, to use the Transbalkanic pipeline in reverse flow. These are important developments, and I think very few expected Moldova to be the first country to access these pipelines in this way. And we're still working on diversifying our provision of energy. We are capable of buying from Europe, but we still have to invest in our infrastructure and interconnectivity. But accessing to the European transportation network really helped. So by 2024, we should also be quite independent in our possibility to access electricity on alternative markets.
Great.
This electricity thing is what Ukraine already did, right? They already made the switch to the European network.
If you look at the geography, Moldova borders Romania and Ukraine. And when Ukraine joined ENTSO-E, the European Electricity Transportation Network, Moldova joined at the same time.
All right. Yeah. Thank you.
Great. Tom, you can move to the follow-up, which is also related to what you mentioned about the Ukrainian crisis as well.
Yeah, so I think it's clear that what you mentioned, right, with the gas cuts, it's a very clear example of Russia using energy as a blackmail. But what we're wondering here is Russia's energy blackmail, does it have to do particularly with the events in Ukraine, or does it have to do with Moldova's pro-European foreign policy? So the events of last year, do you think it's focused on what Moldova was doing, or does it have more to do with the whole Ukrainian crisis?
So we saw a reduction in provision of required gas to Moldova in October 2021, indeed, before the Ukrainian war began. So, but after a pro-European government was voted in. So, you know, this is obviously an attempt to thwart Moldova's path towards European integration, towards anchoring Moldova in the free world, developing using a model of respect for freedom, for human rights, for the rule of law, mm-hmm, for everything that we call the European way of life. And even before, we have seen Russia using elements of hybrid war to slow down Moldova's development along the pro-European path. And we saw meddling in elections and so on. And what we have seen after the war in Ukraine is a significant step up of the hybrid war. Mm-hmm. So we are very grateful to the brave Ukrainian fighters. The resilience of these fighters means that we are not seeing active military actions in Moldova, but we are very much fighting a hybrid war. So, for example, we had last year hundreds of bomb threats. We had cybersecurity breaches and attacks. We have seen attempts to destabilize government by joining forces with local oligarchs who have fled Moldova after the pro-European government came to power. So we are seeing sort of a range of tools, particularly disinformation and mobilization of this discontent using the poverty and the challenges that the people are facing. So we are definitely seeing a whole range of instruments, including the energy blackmail, being used to slow down the development along the pro-European path.
And these attacks that you mentioned, that it's good that it's in addition to energy blackmail, is coming from directly, do you think, Russia and Russian government, right? That making sure that the Moldovan pro-European stance is challenging and less resilient for the development. So not only using energy, but all kind of economic and cyber threats.
So I think they are very much cooperating with these oligarchic forces. And we have seen the U.S. Treasury put people on a sanctions list and clearly show information that these oligarchs are cooperating with Russian interests to destabilize the Moldovan government. And we have obtained information that they are funding, we have illegally funded protests. We have had our local law enforcement authorities seize entire bags of cash ahead of protests. And then we saw very quickly when the international sanctions were put by the US and UK, these protests very quickly stopped, and then they had to regroup and to find new ways to fund these protests. And just to make clear, I'm not saying that people don't have reasons for discontent protest, yeah. or don't have the right to protest. We very much
open for it.
But what we are not open for is illegal financing, this downright bribing of people yeah. to engage in provocations or violent acts. So we have seen the police seize illegal, you know, weapons, sometimes knives or pyrotechnics, or yeah. and we had the information and turned away from the border people who were coming to Moldova with a specific task of destabilizing the protests. You
know, this is something that Russia has done in Ukraine before, right? So it's a very clear playbook.
Indeed, these are elements of a hybrid war where, you know, there are no active military developments, but there are other ways in which the pro-European path is tried to be thwarted.
Yeah, very good point. And here I would like to a little bit twist from, since you mentioned the pro-European, and we know your government position and also your position on the European pro-European foreign policy as well. Related to the second question as well, because Moldova now, as an EU candidate country, continues working on reforms to aim to bring the country closer to the European Union, as you said, improve the rule of law, transparency, human rights. And over the last 12 months, the European Union has also put together a comprehensive support package worth more than $1 billion to strengthen Moldovan resilience as well, so supporting. But always we hear support from the European Union on the media or the expert analysis. And here I would like to see also the perspective from the Moldovan side, because the pro-European means something positive, but I also assume that it's also a challenging thing, because it's challenging because of the geopolitical neighborhood, as you said, the hybrid warfare and the Russian, let's say,
interference
as well. But in from your perspective, what are the challenges for working with the European Union as well? I mean here political, economic, or the rule challenges. Because what are the challenges to access the European market for Moldova? Because I'm coming from Azerbaijan, and then it's also part of the Eastern Partnership, let's say the region itself. And then in our neighborhood, Georgia recently started to change its direction towards more pro-Russia rather than pro-Europe. And the argument, one of the arguments was that, well, accessing to the European market for the Georgian government was very difficult because of all the requirements, the competitiveness and established rules and stuff. So what are the challenges Moldova is facing or can face in this accession period?
Let me first say that the Moldovan people have very clearly showed that they are tired of the old ways and they want Moldova to develop as part of the European family because it believes in the European values. And there is a very different case when you achieve prosperity without investing in these values of freedom, competitiveness, so economic freedom as well, rule of law, human rights, individual liberties. These are very, very important building stones. And the Party of Action and Solidarity, which I represent, came to power in 2021 with this promise of combating corruption and judicial reform. And this is a promise that we have made to our people, not to the EU. Mm-hmm. So I see the EU integration as first and foremost a process that helps deliver real tangible results to the people. And I believe that this is actually why the European integration process has been so successful in delivering peace, prosperity for people, because there is this focus on what real impact it has on people, it has on the ground. And we are not looking for shortcuts. Mm-hmm. We are ready to do this work because, as I said, we are working first and foremost for the benefit of our citizens. And we are very grateful for brave political decisions that have brought Moldova the status of candidate country to the EU. And we look forward to continued brave decision-making. So, for example, when we evaluate by the end of the year the capacity of Moldova to start negotiations we hope that the successes that we have achieved in judicial reform, in combating corruption, in press freedom, for example, we recently had, you know, very good news on indices where there is recognized progress. For example, we are the 28th country of 180 on the press freedom index of Reporters Without Borders. We have also made progress on Transparency's International Corruption Perception Index and have the best score in the last decade. And we have started external evaluation of judges and prosecutors and now have a Superior Council of Magistrates that is externally vetted. And we have taken important changes to the legal system, for example, to allow trial in absentia. So a trial, even if the person has fled. Mm-hmm. And this has allowed us to convict ultimate beneficiaries of the banking fraud, which happened in 2014, but also return, for example, the Chisinau airport, the only airport in Moldova, from an illegal concession to such oligarchic interests, return it to the management of the state. So we have made this progress, and what we hope the European Union will do is match our determination and our progress with brave political decisions to move forward.
And what do you mean by match? What's the expectation for match? Maybe more specifically.
We very much expect negotiations on EU integration to start by the end of the year. This would allow us to work together as a team on very specific chapters of negotiation and achieve more progress together on adjusting to the acquis communautaire. We are also very grateful for the financial support we have received. This is important. It has been very important to diversify, for example, our energy resources, to continue to improve our infrastructure despite the multiple overlapping crises that we have seen in the last 2 years. We are improving connectivity with Romania and the EU. So we are constantly talking to the European Union about sort of the most appropriate types of financial and technical assistance and how these resources could be used better to achieve real progress, real change for people. And of course, finally, I will say that the difficult thing of working with the EU is the need to really increase administrative capacity on all levels of government. And sometimes for countries in transition, that is very difficult to do. So, you know, we have taken decisions, for example, to pay a top-up to officials or public servants who are involved in the negotiation process or in the European integration process. But this is actually, it takes time to build this administrative capacity. So we have to think very carefully with our European partners on how to sequence certain reforms. And as we build more capacity, more administrative capacity, both at the national and local level, to match the type of assistance or financing that we can access.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I think you have a follow-up.
Yeah. I was wondering, the region of Pridnestrovia, Transnistria, right? It's, do you think that creates any difficulties for joining the European Union, right? Or how do you see this issue solved in the future?
So, of course, the fact that we have a frozen conflict on our territory, a separatist region that we do not control, and most importantly, Russian troops on this territory, presents a risk, particularly in the current context.
Yeah.
And again, I will repeat, it's very important for everyone to remain united in the long term in support of Ukraine, because they are not just protecting Ukraine, they are protecting Moldova, they are protecting our European values and our European way of life. And had the resilience of Ukrainian fighters not been so strong, there could have been risks in terms of the Transnistrian region. Right now, the situation is stable. This is also because the border between the Transnistrian region and Ukraine has closed and is protected. And now all goods and services flowing from the Transnistria region to external markets actually go through our official border crossings, which actually help change the dynamics somewhat. So
positively change or negatively, would you say?
Well, this definitely gives more information, more leverage to the constitutional authorities. And a lot of this trade then depends on the willingness of the constitutional authorities to allow the transit or the export. So I think that the dynamics are complex. Some of the dynamics mean that the situation has become more tense, but then in other ways, the Moldovan authorities have received some more leverage. And a lot of the developments in the Transnistrian region will depend on how the war in Ukraine ends and how we will achieve the withdrawal of Russian troops. The Russian Federation made a commitment in the OSCE summit in Istanbul in 1999 that it will withdraw troops, but it hasn't done so. And of course, especially after this war, we will continue to insist that the troops leave the territory of Moldova, and then this will allow us to have a proper conversation on how region could move forward and how this conflict could be resolved.
Yeah, very good point, because as I said, I'm from Azerbaijan, and Azerbaijan also has this separatist issue. And then yesterday, Prime Minister Pashinyan and President Aliyev meet under the European, umbrella to find a solution for their interstate conflict and for the avoiding separatism to exploiting in Azerbaijan and in the South Caucasus as well. And I think European Union would be a good example if they succeed to bring Armenian and Azerbaijani governments together to maybe lesson learned and implement this in another region where Russia is trying to make it destabilize. And you made a very good point that I agree that Ukrainian conflict and the end result of the Ukrainian conflict will decide the tale of other post-Soviet countries as well, including Moldova, Azerbaijan, Georgia, Kazakhstan, everyone's tale, I think, either a positive way that decreased the Russian aggression or negative way that we will face more threat if European Union stop supporting Ukrainian fighters, as you said, with the necessary weapons and technology. Well, I would like to thank you for this interesting conversation. And it was, again, great pleasure and honor to have you to our next podcast. And it was really a fruitful discussion to see the perspectives from the Moldovan side, because it's very important to highlight the voice of the Moldovan government and also the voice of the Moldovans as well. And I think it will be a great debate and podcast episode for our students as well. Thank you so much for joining us. And I wish you also fruitful conversation tonight as well and the rest of stay in Groningen. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to talk about my country and the efforts that our people are making to become part of the European family, to be anchored in the free world in this very difficult geopolitical vortex.
Indeed. Thank you.
Let's make this voice heard.